Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
All right, happy Tuesday, and we're glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. And, you know, I will say this. The power of the bully pulpit of the presidency, as they call it, is it's something you cannot fully define and appreciate unless you really paid close attention to what was going on last night and the president and his speech. And you see the sobriety that the president had. In other words, there is something about being in that office and about the deep responsibility that goes along with being in that office that you just can't quantify. And I thought it was the president really showing a lot of people just how serious he is about that job. And it really also puts into perspective and shines a light on the whole idea that this president doesn't take it seriously. You know, and it's a seriousness, too, that's rooted in the love of country. I just think that is the hardest job in the world. The same goes when Barack Obama's president. He never showed any propensity at all to grow, which was one of my biggest criticisms of him. And I warned about his rigid ideological background and his indoctrination by Frank Marshall Davis and all of these other people in his life, and being an Acorn activist and a Linsky disciple and the Church of GD America and Ayers and Dorn. And, you know, I would have thought that he would have had some capacity for growth and some capacity to sort of break out of his indoctrination and what he thought was always right. And he just didn't have it. Now, I say this in the lead up to saying that for all the people that, and I'm sure the left will say, well, he said he wasn't going to do this, and that's going to be their biggest criticism. But it's neither here nor there. And whether you agree or you disagree, this is a doctrine, a military doctrine that the president laid out from my sources on deep background within the White House that were at the Camp David meeting. And they were very, very clear on this. Actually, a lot of what you heard last night was Trump being Trump and not what was actually being recommended in total, and him being very cautious and very careful and him deeply deliberating the idea of any further commitment and what the need for the commitment was and what it's actually going to be. And so you watch, you know, there's a certain seriousness. If you have any love of the sacrifice of our military, you know just how difficult that is. Because now you're making life and death decisions for other people. And you're making decisions about, okay, what's in the best interest of the United States? What's in the best security interest of the American people? There's a lot on the line here. It is a huge responsibility. And in many ways, I think what you see is, I mean, if people get upset that the president tweets and the president fights back and the president calls out fake news and the president doesn't conform to exactly how people want him to say things, whatever it happens to be. Well, you saw the president now showing the seriousness by which he's taking the job. And in that sense, it's absolutely Trump's better self. It's a side of him that I know exists and that we see, but we don't see all the time. And people wish that they could get Trump to be the way they want all the time. And I just think that he's a man that is going to be himself. He'll take all the advice that you can give him, and then he's going to make up his own mind. And that worked for him during the campaign, and I don't think he's going to abandon that now. because it's worked for him his entire life. But he talked at length about why he was there and the setting that he was in at Arlington and what he called hallowed ground. And, you know, he began his address last night with addressing, well, the military's united and that's how they win and how this country must unite and the history that we have as a country that we have faced many instances of evil and we have prevailed. And how the president, and this is where I would say he now has changed dramatically and is a different person in that office than Barack Obama was. In a lot of ways, but in this way in particular, is that he went on to just talk about how, you know, he very rarely goes against his instincts because his instincts serve him so well. But after a lot of studying and a lot of knowledge that you're only going to get when you're in that office, that he made a different decision than he thought he would. And he also talked about what our purpose is going to be in terms of, you know, this ongoing conflict with Afghanistan and how things are going to be different. And in many ways, I think he outlined how he's going to adopt a new strategy that is very, very different from his predecessors. And how, if we're going to defeat this evil in our time, we're not going to be involved in nation building. We're not going to construct democracies or try to change Afghanistan into a satellite of America because we've tried that. That hasn't worked. And we're shedding too much blood and the sacrifice is too high for the American people. And the odds are it's never going to work anyway. And that's just a fact based on recent historic events. But you can go back deeper in history and you can see that's never happened. And Afghanistan has always been a quicksand for a lot of countries. And what he went on to say is the American people's patience is not going to be unlimited here, nor is our budget going to be unlimited. And he put tremendous pressure on the region to step it up. Now, the Afghani ambassador to America, actually, I was on TV last night, just called in during the show. And I started saying, are you prepared to do your part? Are you prepared to get Afghanistan to do their part? Are you prepared to have your fellow countrymen fighting for what it is you say you want? Because the American people's patience is running really, really thin here. So they better step up. And if they don't step up, we're not going to stay. They're either going to share the burden or our patience is going to be not, you know, unlimited here. And there's going to be no blank check. And the stronger the Afghans get, the less we need to do and want to do. We don't want to be there. So the pressure is enormous on all of them. He stayed with his campaign promise of never telegraphing America's plans ahead of time. He further went on to say there's not going to be anywhere to hide here. In other words, he said, oh, okay, finally. You know, in other words, we're actually going to try and win this, and we're going to bomb the living daylights out of them. Then he talked about the need to do this, again, because that's their home base of plotting and scheming and planning. The attacks on us and the attacks like we see all throughout Europe and last week that we saw in Barcelona. And so I had a lot of friends of mine in the military or were in the military and out of the military, and they're all writing me last night, finally, because he also talked about the rules of engagement and getting rid of the rules of engagement. And this was the freedom that they've always wanted. You know, I'm going to get into this later in the program with Austin Goolsbee. I mean, nobody likes, if you're pro-life, you don't want to see innocent people die, ever. But you can't have troops that you send them to fight, bleed, and die in these wars. And then while you're sending them over there, you're putting handcuffs on them and you're saying to them, by the way, you must have the gun pointed at you at this particular angle before you could ever defend yourself. And you better be able to prove your innocence because we'll assume you're guilty. And that has happened now to our military under Obama's rules of engagement. And he talked at length about, well, now it's time for the generals to decide, the people on the ground to decide, and let them do their job. Because you're not going to have any bureaucrat in Washington that knows as they do what needs to be done. And that is just a simple, fundamental, basic truth. You hire the best people. We've got them. There are U.S. Marines and our Air Force and our Army and our Navy and our Coast Guard. We hire the best people. You train the best people. And then you can't second guess the best people. If you hand them a firearm, they, you know that they're ready, that they know how to use it in the circumstances. And Clint Lawrence is a great case in point where he's a new platoon leader and men in that platoon died the previous week or two by guys on motorcycles with explosive devices. And he's got to make a split second decision. He's new in the job. He knows the history. He knows that they lost platoon members. And here come two motorcycles right towards his platoon. And they're not listening to people saying a stop, stop, stop. They just keep rolling ahead. So now he's got a split second decision to make. Oh, are they good people or do they have bombs in on their motorcycles with them and they're here to kill us? And he made the decision that in that case, the risk was too high and he had to take these guys out. Now, it's easy to second guess them when we're not there. But I don't second guess people in combat. That's their decision. We train them. We hire the best and we hope for the best. But we can't ask them to be defenseless either. And with the rules of engagement, literally have handcuffed these guys to the point where in the back of their minds, they're worried if they pull the trigger and they have to defend themselves, if they're going to end up going to jail. Clint Lawrence was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And we've had his family and his lawyer on this program. And that's a real life instance of why all my military friends are so adamant that these rules of engagement needed to go away. And that's now going to happen. So I think that it's the right policy. He's not telegraphing how many troops. He's not telegraphing what our plans are. But I assume they consist of covert operations and the Afghanis doing most of the fighting, as they should. And I'm assuming that we're going to offer the mayor support and covert operation support and intelligence support. And then they're going to have to go in and do their job. And if at any point we find that they're incapable of actually getting the job done or we don't see the commitment to getting the job done, then we're just going to have to move on and say, okay, we tried. And whatever damage we can do in terms of breaking up these terror organizations, we're going to have to end up doing. Nobody wants to see innocent people die. But, I mean, the idea that if our military thinks it's a threat and they respond as if it's a threat they believe is real, I mean, you can assess it afterwards, but you don't put these people in jail. Well, no, does anybody doubt what happened to end World War II? Hiroshima, Nagasaki was the wrong decision. I don't even like the term collateral damage because it sounds just, frankly, insensitive. But a lot of innocent men, women, and children died, but it ended a war and it saved American lives. And we were attacked. And we've been attacked by radical Islamists. And 9/11 was planned from that country. So if you're going to do it and you're not going to try and change the country and you're not going to nation build and there's not an infinite amount of resources and there's no blank check and they've got to carry their share of the burden financially and otherwise, then it's got a much better chance of working. And it shows we're learning from the past, in my opinion. Anyway, we'll get to all of this today. We have a lot of the president's in Phoenix tonight. And it looks like a lot of troublemakers are preparing for tonight. We'll explain what's being planned and reported on when we get back. So for just one corporate job, only 4 to 6 people even get an interview for every 250 resumes received. Now, those are not very good odds if you're counting on getting a job when you're only uploading your resume. Now, the fact is you need a real person advocating to a real employer that has a real job available. And that's where our friends at Express Employment Professionals come in. Now, Express Pros is your local resource to help you get a brand new job. And Express Pros has more than 18,000 jobs available weekly. That's 18,000 jobs that need to be filled right now. So find the nearest office at expresspros.com. And Express Pros never charges a job seeker to help find employment. Just go to expresspros.com and find jobs in manufacturing, accounting, customer service, sales, distribution, information technology, you name it, they've got it. So just visit the nearest Express Pros office today. Speak with the hiring professionals connected to the available jobs in your community. Just go to expresspros.com today to find the location nearest you. President speaks tonight, scheduled for 10 Eastern as I come on the air on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. I imagine a little late, but you never know. Could be right at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific time. And he's expected to have a big rally there. There's been talk he might pardon Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Joe Arpaio. It'll be interesting because the one interesting thing is an addendum, if you will, to Charlottesville. The mayor was fleeing a town meeting as the audience blamed him for the riot. We'll have more on that in a minute. The Daily Caller is reporting today that whatever disruption Antifa and some of these other groups might be planning for the president's rally tonight in Phoenix is going to be well-funded. They're reporting in the Daily Caller that leading anti-Trump activists backed by major Democratic donors, including Soros, are mobilizing large numbers of protesters ahead of the president's rally in Phoenix with the intention of stealing the spotlight from the president's event. By the way, I'm sure that's all the other media will cover. Local leaders of Indivisible, which is one of the, quote, resistance protest groups, formed as a direct response to the fact that Donald Trump won and they couldn't believe it or get over it. They're now organizing thousands of protesters associated with a coalition of left-wing groups ahead of the event. The Daily Caller goes on, in addition to organizing mass protests outside the rally, Indivisible is encouraging protesters to register for tickets for the rally itself, increasing the likelihood that protesters are going to disrupt President Trump's speech, as often happened at the campaign rallies. Anyway, their website states that the group is a project of the Advocacy Fund, and that is a left-wing advocacy group that gets money from the Open Society Policy Center, which is an arm of Soros Open Society Foundation. Now, I have a long, long, long bit of research that I'm building here. TikTok. Anyway, left-wing activists have organized four events against Trump for today, culminating in one massive protest at the rally. The protest will be led by every organization and individual that doesn't support the president. And I'm sure many are coming in from outside. The Phoenix mayor, Greg Stanton, criticized Trump for holding the rally. Well, you know, there is something, Mr. Mayor, it's called freedom of speech and assembly. You may want to look it up. And if you get it right, we'll give you a star on your project. Quick break. We'll come back. Well, more on this and the other news of the day and the president's speech last night. Hi, 25 till the top of the hour. Toll free, our number, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. You know, you want to know what keeps me up at night in terms of real specific threats that can happen? And there's so many of them, really. You always worry about a suitcase type of nuke or some type of radioactive whatever, a small nuclear weapon, a suitcase bomb, something like that. But I've always worried that you're going to see, and God forbid this is ever true, we're going to wake up one day and simultaneously radical Islamists or somebody are going to get a hold of shoulder-to-air missiles, and they're going to take out a plane low-flying coming into LAX, LaGuardia, Kennedy, Hartsfield in Atlanta, Dallas, Chicago, O'Hare, LAX, you know, all these airports, and they're going to do it once. And it's because the technology, while advanced, it just isn't that advanced anymore. I mean, you go back to the Mujahideen and their battle against the former Soviet Union and Russia, and I got to tell you something, those shoulder-to-air missiles just was crushing the Air Force of the former Soviet Union, just crushing them. Anyway, it looks like ISIS, sadly, Reuters is reporting, may have the capacity to shoot down a civilian airliner. Goes on to say Lebanon's army found anti-aircraft missiles among the cache of weapons in an area abandoned by the Islamic State militants. The arms cache also included mortars, medium-heavy machine guns, assault rifles, grenades, anti-tank weapons, anti-personnel mines, improvised explosive devices, and a lot of ammunition. And on Friday, the Lebanese army said it discovered the surface-to-air missiles in this weapons cache left by al-Nusra and their militants in the area that were captured by Hezbollah and then taken over by the army. That is a really, really chilling scenario. If you've ever spent any time, I'm just fascinated by air flight. And, you know, I've spent time, I have to wait for flights at airports. And I love looking at and examining flight patterns. I mean, what most people really don't know is there's actually like roads up in the sky. Obviously, they're not marked, but there's certain corridors where jets fly the same corridor. You know, if there's extreme turbulence at a particular point, the pilot will pilot down to those people that are following them and warn them about what's coming up. And then they can warn the passengers. I mean, it's pretty sophisticated. Then you got private jets, and then you got commercial airliners, and you got so much going up on in the sky. It's actually crazy. I mean, one thing, it's a tribute that it's safer to fly in an airplane than it actually is to drive a car today. It's nuts. I mean, we've so advanced the technology. And it's a tribute to the airline industry. And I know when we have a crash, it's huge news, and it should be. But, you know, we have these crashes every day in automobiles. It just is a fact that it's safer to fly in a plane. And most people have no idea the number of airplanes that are up in the sky at any given moment. And so it's certainly a real risk, and probably does say that everything that the president was saying last night is true. You know, I did notice that John McCain, so nice of him, praising the president's speech last night. I commend the president. Oh, really? So nice of you, Senator McCain. Taking a big step in the right direction with the new strategy in Afghanistan. You know, you know what bothers me about all politicians and a lot of people, even in my business, the media? All of them are almost always... that their decision-making process is filtered through sort of a sophisticated, bizarre wiring that is so narcissistic. Every decision they make is, how's this going to make me look? How does this impact me? And really, decisions should be made on the basis of what's right and what's wrong. That's simple. Or it should be made on, how does this affect others? I'm not saying we all make the right decisions all the time. We don't. We're flawed human beings. But I'm just saying that's what should be going through your head. Lindsey Graham saying Trump's speech shows the gloves are off in Afghanistan. He was effusive in his praise. I see that North Korea was caught aiding Syria's chemical weapons program. That's not good news either. And China's now calling the 15-0 vote a mistake in terms of sanctions that have been placed on North Korea. That's not good either. And some of the other news, I saw that Mitch McConnell, this is a Kentucky survey. Kentucky voters, 645, 18% of respondents, that's it, approved of McConnell's current performance, 74% who disapproved. Now, he is the longest serving U.S. senator in Kentucky history, represented the state since 1984, and couldn't even get health care done, and was so quick to give up on it. Now, we're going to talk later in the program to Freedom Caucus member Jim Jordan. And I'm standing by that September, October, November, early December, this is it. You're either going to succeed or fail in these months. And success will be defined as, you know, taking 7 rates, turning them into 3, getting rid of some of these ridiculous taxes, double taxation, the death tax. And then, of course, tax cuts for the middle class. Then, of course, you want corporate cuts, dramatic corporate cuts, and you want the repatriation of multinationals because that's trillions of dollars parked overseas. And when these multinational corporations can bring them to the U.S. and spend that money, and corporations have more money to spend and it's more profitable for them, when you include with that ending Obama-era regulations and a more business-friendly environment that Trump has already created, well, that means that they'll invest the millions and billions in manufacturing centers and factories here in America and put those people in poverty on food stamps and out of work back to work. And that then gives them a ladder to climb for the American dream. So that's good for the forgotten men and women that the election was supposed to be about. And of course, the media, you know, they'll just race from one controversy to the next and continue the narrative that Donald Trump cannot be president because they never accepted the fact that they lost after colluding with Hillary, after being proven to have colluded with Hillary vis-a-vis WikiLeaks. Well, their collusion is not stopped. They are the willing spokespeople, basically, for all things liberal and all things ideologically left and all things Democrat. That is your media today. At some point, the exposure of them is going to be so great. I am firmly, fully convinced that the day and age of media being trusted now is over. And they just don't know it yet. and they think it probably can't get worse than it is now. But I think most people see them as the fake news outlets that they are. You know, something interesting happened in Charlottesville. Some of the fallout that went on. Residents are still really angry over the fact that the mayor didn't order the police to intervene, not last Saturday, the Saturday before, in the violence that escalated between these white supremacist jerks and some of the groups that were there protesting, not the peaceful protesters, but the people like Antifa and Black Lives Matter, etc. It got so angry at a town hall meeting last night, the protesters stormed the meeting in Charlottesville, forcing the mayor and several other city officials to have to leave under police protection. The meeting was not supposed to be about what happened on August the 12th, but the residents and the protesters, they stormed the meeting and forced the mayor to formally cancel the gathering before fleeing. The police said that they attempted to regain control by removing three individuals. The vice president and the three council members fled the meeting while a group carrying a sign that read, "Blood on your hands," stood at their desks. Crowd lined up to scream into the microphone at the mayor and the city council as they presided over the police action. Now, I read yesterday that Terry McAuliffe is temporarily suspending freedom of speech rights, saying it's not an end to freedom of speech. Well, it either, you know, you can't be a little bit, it either it is or it isn't. You just either you are, or you're not. Anyway, Mike, we need you to leave, one protester said to the mayor. You just showed us how weak you are and just showed us you're not a leader. It's like the governor, Terry McAuliffe, you know, comes out with a big lie that the police contradicted about weapons being distributed all around the city that were going to be picked up by these white supremacists. And the police contradicted it and said they found no weapons. And McAuliffe was telling everybody they were outmanned and outgunned. They couldn't go in. Well, if it's that bad, you got to send the National Guard in. Why didn't they do that? Back to Phoenix tonight. Both the Phoenix Police Department and the FBI now are on high alert for the president's rally tonight. And the Phoenix Police Department has planned for maximum staffing during the president's visit. The FBI, Department of Homeland Security, coordinating the event. Political leaders, law enforcement officials also on high alert for this. The big question is whether there will be more supporters of Trump inside the convention center that holds 29,000 or more protesters outside, and how many protesters will actually end up getting inside and try and disrupt the president's speech. Anyway, the Phoenix police chief said in a statement that her force will have maximum staffing during the visit. The department's working 24/7. Now, we saw what good policing and good organization is in Boston. And also, you got to, as I said yesterday, I mean, the protesters, they were standing up against racism, against white supremacy, and they went out and they peacefully, the 99% of them, you know, with a huge crowd, they went out about their business and stood up against what is repugnant and evil. It was fine. And the few agitators and those that wanted to disrupt, the police handled incredibly skillfully and perfectly. So there is a way to handle these things, and we'll see what happens. The speech is supposed to start at 10 o'clock as I'm going on the air tonight on Hannity, and we'll have all of the unfolding and the speech tonight at 10. I just told you about the Daily Caller and what they're reporting, that this advocacy fund, a project of the advocacy fund, funding this group Indivisible, one of the resistant groups out there, is a left-wing advocacy groups. They get money from the Open Society Policy Center, which is an arm of the Soros Open Society Foundations. A lot of information about this stuff. Antifa, by the way, the Phoenix News Times has reported today, not only is Antifa pledging, quote, what they're calling coverage of the Trump rally in Phoenix, they're planning to do so, they say, in the spirit of hostility. You know, I mean, if you're pledging to be hostile against other people, how can you interpret that any other way than to mean you're threatening other people? Anyway, the Phoenix News Times reports that Arizonans aligned with the leftist organization will be at the convention center at 6 p.m. according to their website. It tells supporters to look for the black flags. Quote, "We will converge in the spirit of solidarity and hostility to the current order. And as a physical body ready to act in self-defense and mutual protection of each other from cops, fascist, and liberal radical peace police," their website states. Now, the Antifa web message, they report, warns that the Trump rally goers, quote, want to build a white ethno state in the U.S. Indigenous people, immigrants, anarchists, and others have fought white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and anti-immigrant zealots in the streets for years in Arizona. We also have this Democratic monument toppling mania. Now it's spread to London. And we have in New York City, Comrade Bill de Blasio, the mayor. I hope Bo Dietl defeats this guy. I know it's a long shot. And I've talked to Bo a number of times. He's running on the independent line. I don't get to vote in New York City because I don't live in New York City. But anyway, the comrade, the mayor, has now expanded their target list beyond Teddy Roosevelt's statue outside the Museum of Natural History. By the way, close to the Oyster Bay out in Long Island, they have a big Teddy Roosevelt there. I wonder if somebody's going to come to that. It's pretty, you know, there's nothing that is out of bounds now. Anyway, they have a towering statue of Christopher Columbus is slated for a review by a Comrade de Blasio mayoral task force as a potential symbol of white supremacy that must be torn down. 76-foot structure honoring the explorer Christopher Columbus at Columbus Circle should be among the statues reviewed by the city for potential purging, said the city council speaker, Melissa Mark, whatever her name is. I would definitely encourage them to take a look at this one as well. When asked about the towering statue of Columbus, a gift from Italian Americans to the city in 1892. Wow. And then it's even gone to London. Now they're dealing with this controversy. By the way, Bikers for Trump are now vowing to protect Trump supporters who want to attend the rally tonight in case these protesters who pledged to be there, you know, cause trouble. So anyway, they're going to be, I've no doubt, whatever. I actually met some of these guys. They're not white, at least the group that I met. I don't know if there's other groups. I interviewed some one time. They're just salt of the earth people. Most of them are veterans. Salt of the earth. Those are the people I met. I can't wait to see how the media describes the veterans that are going to be there because they think that, Trump supporters need protection. Just watch. And then I'll try and find some and interview some of them and ask them, and they'll denounce, you know, racism, white supremacy as evil that it is. Watch the media. They're so corrupt.
The soldier understands what we as a nation too often forget, that a wound inflicted upon a single member of our community is a wound inflicted upon us all. When one part of America hurts, we all hurt. And when one citizen suffers an injustice, we all suffer together. Loyalty to our nation demands loyalty to one another. Love for America requires love for all of its people. When we open our hearts to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice, no place for bigotry, and no tolerance for hate. The young men and women we send to fight our wars abroad deserve to return to a country that is not at war with itself at home. We cannot remain a force for peace in the world if we are not at peace with each other. As we send our bravest to defeat our enemies overseas, and we will always win, let us find the courage to heal our divisions within. Let us make a simple promise to the men and women we ask to fight in our name, that when they return home from battle, they will find a country that has renewed the sacred bonds of love and loyalty that unite us together as one. As I outlined in my speech in Saudi Arabia 3 months ago, America and our partners are committed to stripping terrorists of their territory, cutting off their funding, and exposing the false allure of their evil ideology. Terrorists who slaughter innocent people will find no glory in this life or the next. They are nothing but thugs and criminals and predators and, that's right, losers.
All right. That, of course, the president last night in his address at Arlington, and I think a very, very powerful message on his part in so many different ways. You know, not the least of which is this president seems to understand. You know, go through a lot of what he's saying here and what he's meaning here, because we spent an awful lot of time in Afghanistan and Iraq. And one of my biggest complaints is Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan. We're asking men and women to fight, bleed, and die for their country. And they fight and they go and they win. And then the war becomes politicized. And through the prism of that politics, then horrible decisions are made later. He talked about winning last night, not nation building last night, obliterating the enemy last night, empowering the generals and the troops on the ground and getting rid of, you know, all of these restrictions that had been placed upon them by rules of engagement by Obama. He really went hard. I had the Afghan ambassador to the U.S. call. And I'm like, are you ready to do your job, your part? Are you going to get Pakistan to do their part? You know, he's saying there's no way to hide. We will blow them away. But you've got to contribute. This is, you know, we don't have a blank check here. And the patience of the American people is run thin. He also talked about securing our borders at home. And stronger Afghans get, the less we need to do. And we're not, you know, this is not nation building or constructing democracies. You know, principled realism, he called it. Not a blank check. They got to share the burden. Number one, shows the president can adapt and learn. I thought his pitch, his tone, his cadence, his presence was perfect for the environment. Showed he could be as presidential as, yes, you want him to be. Those that complain he's not, oh, a president doesn't tweet. A certain seriousness he talked about that comes with his love of the military and what that office, the burden of the office that comes on anybody that sits in that chair and has that office, that we faced evil. We've always prevailed in this country. Talked about Arlington and hallowed ground and those that fought and died, those that lay there, have volunteered because they love their country, fought for the country that they love. We got to honor their sacrifice. You know, it's pretty amazing the things that he was saying. And, you know, he also addressed the need to be a united country. And he went against his own instincts. I mean, it was a pretty amazing night last night in terms of doing what is needed and necessary also to protect all of us here at home, in my opinion. Buck Sexton, host of Buck Sexton with America Now, former CIA agent, NYPD Intelligence Division specialist, served in Afghanistan and with the CIA, worked closely with senior U.S. military personnel on Afghanistan policy. Captain Roger Hill is the author of Dog Company, a true story of American soldiers abandoned by their high command. He knows exactly what I'm talking about with rules of engagement. Buck, we'll start with you. I thought it was a very powerful, persuasive case, and I do think the president hit all the right notes addressing all the mistakes that we have been making in this country in previous conflicts.
You know, Sean, I'm of two minds after last night. I mean, on the one hand, I think that President Trump gave a phenomenal speech and did frame the issue of Afghanistan in a way strategically that will be helpful and that I think is much more clear-minded than certainly what we've seen in the past administration, thinking of it as a South Asia problem, as an issue of not just Afghanistan, but Afghanistan, Pakistan, as we call it, and coming at it from a really multi-pronged and multinational approach. On the other side of it, though, this is a problem that unfortunately was allowed to rapidly deteriorate, particularly in the latter part of the Obama administration. The Taliban is in, and we should be very clear about this, because if we're going to assess how President Trump's strategy is working or whether it's working, we should know that the Taliban is currently in the best position it has been in since 2001. That by the end of the Obama administration, they had taken more territory than they had ever held since being toppled after the initial invasion. And the Taliban is absolutely hammering Afghan security forces, Afghan national police, all the different security units they have. I mean, they had about 15,000 casualties in 2016. So I think the Trump approach is going to bear fruit for a variety of reasons, and I think that the speech last night was an essential starting point for it, but it is going to be a steep uphill climb.
This is not an easy go. I also like that he didn't telegraph where we're going. which I think has been a mistake. One of the biggest mistakes Obama made was giving them an exit date, which allows the enemy to prepare and wait out until U.S. troops leave. Captain Roger Hill, I think you know full well what the rules of engagement did to our troops there and the fact that we weren't in that to win that battle and that we weren't prepared to use the overwhelming force necessary to win. And then, of course, politics came into play.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that I'm, I guess, happiest about or content about the speech that was given last night is that the president more or less renounced this counterinsurgency strategy that we've pursued for the last 10-plus years and has, I believe, communicated that we're going to pursue more or less a counterterrorism strategy where we're going to go after the enemy in a much more kinetic way. And as you just mentioned, key to that is taking off the handcuffs that we've been dealing with in terms of rules of engagement.
Well, and, you know, I mentioned last night, I forget who I mentioned it to, but I brought up the issue of Clint Lawrence and the story that he was a platoon leader. Now he's got 20 years in jail he's facing. He took over a platoon that had been attacked by these motorcycle riders that have explosive devices. He sees two of them on his way to his platoon like a week or two after he takes a leadership role in that platoon, and he's got to make a split-second decision. And we come in and second-guess this poor guy? I'm sorry, that is just fundamentally wrong. And now facing 20 years in jail, the good news is there apparently is some DNA evidence now that could change that case dramatically if we could just get everybody moving.
Yeah, just to dovetail on what you said, one of the things I'm hopeful for is that cases like Clint's and Derek's and Sergeant Derek Miller, that is, which is another case I know that you're passionate about, and others won't even come into question to begin with because of the shift in strategy. You know, one of the reasons Clint and companies like Dog Company, from the book you just mentioned that I authored, is the problems that we faced were because we're living and operating in and amongst the population where they lived. And I believe if we can come out of that mindset that we're there to basically raise from infancy, you know, a Western style or looking democracy in Afghanistan, which is a task way too difficult for any nation to undergo on its own, and just focus on sort of being the fly swatter, if you will, in that area and putting down, you know, these terrorist thugs as they pop their head up, then we won't have, you know, young leaders like Clint Lawrence or myself living amongst the population to be set up with these unwinnable situations.
It's so unfair and it is so unjust, and he's not the only one. I think we had eight times the number of people, Buck, when you look at all earlier previous wars that have ended up in trouble because of the new rules of engagement and them trying to protect themselves and them trying to protect their troops and those people that work under them so they don't come home in a box.
Sean, I think that that's a symptom of a larger disease, and that's politics driving military policy, and I mean politics here at home.
Real quick, and we got to take a break, but go ahead.
This is why we had, under the Obama administration, a surge announced at the same time as a withdrawal, which gave the enemy, I mean, the Taliban specifically, a roadmap of just how to play it. You know, withdraw for a while, extend into some areas, pull out of other areas, understand that now the previous president, President Obama, had committed to a timetable that any deviation from would create headaches for him at home. And the Taliban, believe it or not, you know, they're savvy enough to watch TV and pay enough attention to have a sense of Obama being somebody who really does care greatly about what the Democrat base thought of what he was doing in Afghanistan and all of the political implications of what he was doing as the president at the time. I mean, Iraq as the bad war, Afghanistan as the good war, was almost a meme that Obama had attached himself to when he was running, and there was no way for him to get away from it, or at least he was unwilling to get away from it. And then when you saw the way that the war was actually being fought when he was commander-in-chief.
You can't telegraph this stuff to the enemy. You can, just like I don't think the president telegraphed at all any strategy, troop strength, anything else that he's talking about, except that he's going to rain down hell on an enemy that wants to get here and destroy us. And it's a very, very complicated, difficult issue because it's not a nation state that we're battling. It is a network of people that literally are scattered throughout the world and plotting and planning and scheming their next attack to, like in Barcelona last week and 9/11.
Hannity Headlines.
A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you
anywhere you go.
To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, toll-free, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program as we continue our discussion with Buck Sexton and Captain Roger Hill about the president and his new Afghan policy. Buck, I didn't want to interrupt you. We had to do a break. I'll let you finish your thought about moving forward, especially, I assume, covert operations, plausible deniability is a big part of this, and hopefully using on the front lines the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan to protect their own region.
Well, yeah, Sean, it's going to be essential, especially when you're looking at the what would be the counterterrorism and HVT, high-value target side of this equation, that they are doing all kinds of things that the public in general is not going to know about, but that will be essential for trying to handle the Taliban and its allies. I mean, you've got the Islamic State with its Khorasan province that has set up in the area. You still have some remnants of Al-Qaeda in the region. You have actually Al-Qaeda in South Asia has set up shop as a new franchise, or at least a rebranded franchise. And then, of course, there's the Haqqani network, which is part of, but also separate from the Taliban in a sense. So you have all these different groups that are working to destabilize Afghanistan, and we have to go after targets in rapid succession, and we have to do it without worrying about what the blowback may be here at home sometimes, and that's going to mean taking action that the commander-in-chief himself is going to have to be supportive of.
Yeah, and I think explaining, actually Dana Perino said this last night, and I'll throw this to you, Captain Hill. I mean, we're going to have to keep the American people updated. And I think the American people, as long as they're updated and they know that there's an end game here and they know that there's not an endless stream of money or an endless stream of support, and these people need to step up, and unless they're stepping up, we're not going to do the job for them, I think they have a pretty high degree of patience.
Yeah, and I wouldn't go as far as to say that endless is the word I would use. I think it's possible that we could be there for some time. Let's make no bones about it. When we show up to fight anywhere, in the eyes of extreme Islam, they're going to send their own foot soldiers to match our forces best they can. Afghanistan, I think Buck would agree, has largely become a training area or a place for extreme Islam to sort of vet or test the mettle of its frontline fighters. And I think that'll continue.
I'm sure our military knows all of that and are prepared for all of that. But if the Afghanistani people aren't going to step up, then it's not going to work. There's no way it's going to work.
Okay. Well, then what are the metrics, right? And how are we going
we'll be able to see very clearly if they're stepping up
to take over? I think if you'll just give me a second, I think one of the best things we can do. And I agree with Buck's analysis in terms of providing that special operations footprint. The special operations community is much better suited for this fight than the conventional forces, which was what I served under in the 101st. And also is a part of their mission set, especially the Green Beret community, to train the Afghan security forces to take over. But again, that has to be based on quality and not quantity in terms of time. And when we can create a footprint of Afghan security forces that can better support the government, that's when we'll be able to start having discussions about where we are with stepping out of the picture and allowing the government to take over.
All right. Thank you both for being with us. We appreciate it. Buck and Captain Rogers, thank you so much Captain Roger Hill, thanks so much for being with us. 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. When we come back, Jim Jordan, former chairman, now still a member of the Freedom Caucus. I say that September, October, November, early December, it's make-or-break time. Are the Republicans going to keep their promises to the American people? That's next.
Are you willing to come out and forcefully condemn Trump's statement, such as Bob Corker and Mitt Romney have?
Yeah. So let me get into this. And I was looking forward to this moment right here, Eric, have this conversation with you. First of all, the president and I spoke on Monday morning about the need for moral clarity, about the need at this very difficult time in our country to have a morally clear message to absolutely and singularly condemn this repulsive bigotry. He agreed with that, and he did that later that day on Monday. And I thought his speech on Monday was pitch perfect. Then the next day, I think it was in New York on an infrastructure press conference, in answer to a question, I think he made comments that were much more morally ambiguous, much more confusing. And I do think he could have done better. I think he needed to do better. I actually think what he did 2 days ago in commending the peaceful protests against the hate in Boston was a good start. And I think just what I heard, I don't know, 25 minutes ago, was exactly what a president needs to say, what we needed to hear. So I do believe that he messed up in his comments on Tuesday when it sounded like a moral equivocation or at the very least moral ambiguity, when we need extreme moral clarity. The House has passed its bill. We're waiting for the Senate to pass theirs. Who wasn't disappointed that the Senate failed to pass that bill by one vote the other day? We all are. The reason we're disappointed that they failed to do it. Yeah, okay, I set you up for that one, didn't I? Yeah. The reason I'm disappointed is because the status quo is not an option. Obamacare is not working. You just described your premium increases, your deductible increases. A third of the counties in Wisconsin are down to one insurer right here. We've got dozens of counties around America that have zero insurers left. So doing nothing really isn't an option. So the Senate, honestly, the Senate has to get back and keep at it. And so what I've been telling our friends in the Senate, get back to work. Get a bill passed. We will meet you in conference and figure this out. But we can't take no for an answer. And unfortunately, that's kind of where we are with the Senate right now. Do I wish there would be a little less tweeting? Of course I do. But I don't think that it's going to change. I think the president feels, and he rightfully feels, that he has found a way to communicate directly with people around the media. And I think he's been very successful at doing that. Are there some of those tweets that I prefer not to have seen? Of course there are. But at the end of the day, what I control are my own actions. And that is how I conduct myself, look myself in the mirror, and kiss my kids at bed at night.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. Although I don't think anybody saw it, that was Paul Ryan on CNN last night doing a town hall in his district in Wisconsin and explaining his relationship with the president. I did not think it was that bad. He was right about the president's comments on Monday. And I only think the only thing he was missing, there was the tweet that I went into yesterday that the president sent out this Sunday about people standing up in Boston against hatred and bigotry and racism. And there is this long history montage, which I have played, where he's disavowed again and again and again and again and again. You know, I have a tape from 1991 on Larry King Live. I got a tape from 2000 on Matt Lauer's show, and all the times he did it during the campaign. And that's him also saying, well, we in the House got our job done. And while it wasn't exactly what I wanted, they did do their job. They did the best that they could because some Republicans turned their back on their promises and they got a health care bill that was infinitely better than what we would have otherwise had, which is now still Obamacare. And the Senate, it's inexcusable what the Senate did. And joining us now, Jim Jordan, Congressman, Ohio, and of course, the group that I support the most, that I think is the most principled and fighting the hardest and working the hardest, is the Freedom Caucus. And he's the former chairman, but he got demoted. And now Mark Meadows is the chairman. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing fine, Sean.
You didn't get demoted, did you? You didn't get demoted at all, did you?
No. It was I did it for 2 years. It's time for someone else, and Mark's doing an outstanding job.
Yeah. What do you think about the speaker's comments on all those issues we just played?
Well, I like your comments. Six senators voted against the very same bill, Sean, that they voted for. Six Republican senators, the same bill they voted for 18 months ago. Same words, same sentences, same commas, same punctuation. Everything was the same except a different bill number at top. And that was the bill the clean repeal legislation. That's frustrating. And look, if they're getting any type of the same experience I'm getting, I've been for 3.5 weeks traveling around the 4th District of Ohio, and I knew and I expected this. People are ticked, and they deserve to be and it's appropriate that they're kicked off because we told them we were going to do one thing and it's not done yet. So that's what's frustrating.
Well, it's beyond frustrating. And the other thing that frustrates me is, you know, every 2 and 4 years and what I've done on both radio and TV, and I know you're busy. You probably don't get to watch or listen as much as you like.
I watch you a lot, brother.
I look better with makeup on, and I don't have makeup. I have a baseball hat, a pair of jeans, and a T-shirt on right now. And that's the way I like it.
That's the way I am.
But, you know, I watch all of this and I played this history of both, as I mentioned, Donald Trump throughout the years, disavowing, denouncing, repudiating the evil of racism and bigotry. Nobody in the media would do that. The second thing, and the second thing that I think is really important with the president is every 2 to 4 years that Republicans get the race card played against them in elections. And I played the whole history of that. And the president, I thought, did the right thing and said the right thing. And it just wasn't fast enough. He didn't identify people by name enough. And it's just, you've got these forces trying to take this man down every day.
Sean, there's no room for racism, no room for anti-Semitism. And look, you and I know this president is not racist and not anti. There's no way. It's just not the case. But the left, he can never do anything good enough. We know this is the case. The left, they decided, you know, when they decided they were going to never give this guy a break and they were going to come after him, they decided about 3 a.m. on November 9th, right? That's when they decided they were going to do everything they could to undermine what he campaigned on, what Republicans campaigned and conservatives campaigned on. That's when they decided. So nothing's ever going to be good enough for the left. We all know that what took place in Charlottesville was repugnant. It was wrong. It was terrible. And let's condemn it. And let's get focused now on doing what the American people sent us to do, in spite of what the Democrat Party is going to do and in spite of what the mainstream press is going to do. Let's get focused on those things. That's what people are telling me all across our district. Get focused on what you all campaigned on.
I will say this, that the months of September, October, November, and early December now are going to define this Congress and, in large part, the presidency of Donald Trump. It's not easy to get things done during election years. Now, it could happen. And I'll just say the following to your colleagues, and you're not the problem. I mean, I know the work behind the scenes, that the heavy lift that you, Jim Jordan, and frankly, the entire Freedom Caucus was involved in terms of getting health care across the finish line. And it was it without you guys, it wouldn't have happened. It would not have happened. That's a fact.
And we appreciate your help. But you're right. We made that bill better.
You made that bill better and made it happen.
It sure did. Yep.
All right. So, you know, if Congress doesn't get middle class tax cuts, if they don't get corporate cuts, if they don't get repatriation trillions. And again, the corporate cuts and the repatriation are all about building manufacturing centers and factories and creating jobs in America. If you don't get that done, minimum, and get some of the ridiculous double taxation, death tax, all that stuff getting rid of, and you don't get energy independence, because I am convinced, as you know, in Ohio, that there are millions of high-paying career jobs available under our feet. And if we don't get 300 miles of that wall built to show, yep, we're getting it done, we're doing it now, look at the progress. If you and you don't do something with Obamacare, I think the entire House is probably in jeopardy, and the Senate, where they could have picked up 6-7 seats, that's in jeopardy.
Yeah, no, you're right, Sean. Look, if we had to run for re-election next month, what would we campaign on? That's the point. So we've got to get those things done. That's what we ran on. Today, the president's down on the border. The border wall, the border security wall is critical. Let's make sure it gets funded in the government funding bill this fall. Let's make sure we do the tax reform. Let's forget about this revenue neutral framework baloney. Let's focus on letting families keep more of their money and designing a tax code on the corporate side that produces economic growth. Plain and simple. Focus on those goals. You'll get the right policy. And then, of course, like you said, we got to finally deal with this Obamacare, which is such a hurt to families and a hurt and a drag on our economy.
You know, how many energy jobs do you project? If America committed that in 4 years we're going to be energy independent, how fast could we do it? How many millions of jobs are created?
I don't know the number, but it's a lot. I know what's happened in eastern Ohio and with the shale drilling, and what took place over the last several years is down a little bit now based on the price around the world. But that was a huge success for so many folks. And then the manufacturers who supply the material needed to make sure you can do that drilling. All that is positive. Put in place a tax code that's conducive to that. Don't overregulate our economy. All those things we talked about that just make good common sense. And again, that President Trump campaigned on, those are the things that got to get done this fall. But I think that the key focus is the tax reform element, probably more than any of the others.
Yeah, I think repatriation, if you bring in trillions of dollars, people that have that kind of money, they're not going to park it in a bank at low interest rates.
Yeah.
They're going to invest it.
No.
And if this is the country to invest in, because we have we've gotten rid of all these burdensome regulations which the president did, getting rid of the Obama era regulations. I mean, we see the benefits without even getting the cuts in and getting the money in the coffers. You know, there were two stories out in the last 2 days. One, Lithuania is now buying energy from the U.S., not Russia. Ukraine is doing the same thing. And even China now is buying our energy and bypassing the North Koreans. So, I mean, that's an amazing opportunity of what we can do. And frankly, helping Western Europe from a security front, because then they're not so dependent on the idea that Vladimir Putin could get pissed off one day and turn off the spigot, and there goes the lifeblood of their economies.
No, that's the fundamental point, and it's the big picture that Ronald Reagan understood, I think our president understands. When America leads, the world's better. When we lead economically, it allows us to lead more diplomatically. It also allows us to lead more militarily. When America leads in energy and economy and tax and all the stuff, when we lead, the world's a better and safer place. That's what's at stake with all these policies, and that's why it's so important we get them done.
All right, stay right there. Jim Jordan, I think I'm going to be out with him some point in the fall for an event that he's holding. I don't know if we've worked that out yet, Congressman, but I'm willing to go. Although it may be better for you if I don't.
We'd love to have you.
It may be better if I don't show up. You don't want to be tied to me in any way, and I don't blame you.
Our folks in Western Ohio and West Central and North Central Ohio would love you, brother.
Well, I love the people in Ohio, and we need them every election year. We're begging them, please, pretty please, with sugar on top, go vote. All right, as we continue, Jim Jordan is with us. He's one of the good guys in the Freedom Caucus. Where do you guys stand with Speaker Ryan right now? He did the town hall last night. What are your thoughts on the job that he's doing and how we all working together? And have you been corresponding a lot? We're not going to have the same mistake as the health care bill where nobody sees it, and it's just an establishment bill dumped on.
No, I don't think so. I mean, one of the things we've said is, show us the legislation. We have to pass this budget, which creates that entity called reconciliation, that vehicle called reconciliation. And we said, we'll pass the budget when we see the bill. We don't want to, before we open the door, we kind of like to know what's on the other side. So we're working with the leadership to put together the right kind of tax package that's going to let families keep more of their money and going to create economic greater opportunity for economic growth. So, yeah, we'll move forward in that direction.
Well, I mean, in other words, this is going to be a consensus bill. We're not going to have a situation like last time?
That's our hope.
Well, that's our hope doesn't make me confident. I mean, I want to hear, yes, we're going to have a consensus bill.
Well, I mean, that's what the Freedom Caucus wants. We want a bill that's consistent with what we told the American people. You know, what we're hearing right now, the outlines of it are good. Go to three brackets on the personal side. Let middle-class families keep more of their money. Get the corporate rate much lower than it is now. There's debate about the immediate expensing and a host of other issues, the repatriation, how much and what that rate will be. So all those things, but the outline is good, but we want some more specifics, and I'm not on the Ways and Means Committee. I don't write the specifics of the legislation, but we're providing all the input that says do it in a way that's consistent with what we promised the voters we're going to do.
Yeah. So what do you think is realistically going to be done by the time you guys go away for, well, how many breaks do you have between now? Because I don't live the life of a congressman. No, with all due respect to your colleagues, I've never seen such vacation time in my life, but I mean, you're going to work how many legislative days between now and Christmas?
I don't know that number. I know there's only 12 scheduled in September, which is a problem. And I know that 8 weeks ago, we stood at a press conference, Mark Meadows, myself, and a host of other members in House Freedom Caucus, and we said, do not go home in August until we know the outline of a tax bill, until we decide something on what we're going to do on this debt ceiling issue, what kind of structural change we're going to get in a debt ceiling increase that'll deal with the big problem, the $20 trillion debt problem we have. And let's stay in August until we figure out health care. We said those three things, and yet now our leadership said, no, go on home. We'll just come back and try to get things done in 12 days in September. I think that was a mistake. I think the American people think that. I know you do. You talked about that a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
In the month of July. Like, stay there in August and let's get something done.
Get your job done. I don't understand the lack of urgency. Well, look, it's now do or die. And in these 3.5 months will define this Congress. And I hope they get the work done for the people that need it. There's so many people suffering in this country. Congressman Jim Jordan, always a pleasure. Thank you. And all my best to your fellow Freedom Caucus members, the only people that I really feel we can count on at this time. 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Are the rules of engagement sending American troops to jail unnecessarily? Are they ending up getting Americans killed? And the president last night will lift the rules of engagement. We'll talk about that with Austin Goolsbee next.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour on the Sean Hannity Show. Our top story remains the president and, of course, his address to the nation last night about Afghanistan and moving forward. And without repeating everything, the speech was, to me, the president's better self, principled realism he talked about. He says he usually does not go against his gut instinct, but there's something about being in that office that does change people. And after looking and studying, he addressed how, number one, how this country must unite, how we have faced down evil in the past and prevailed. He went against his own instinct, that this country's patience is not unlimited, is not going to be nation building, and it's up to those in the region at the end of the day. He will not telegraph our plans. He'll get rid of the stupid Obama rules of engagement and Obama's control factors. He's going to empower the generals and the boots on the ground, and everybody must share a burden here. Austin Goolsbee is with us. He's the former economic council advisor. I don't know what you were for Obama. I would never even want to associate myself after those disastrous economic 4 years. But as you can see, every economic indicator is up since President Trump has gotten in office, and I'm sure you're really happy about it.
Well, first of all, Obama was there for 8 years. I know you haven't been sleeping well, Sean, with what's been happening for President Trump.
By the way, you haven't been sleeping. Did you really go to Oregon to watch the eclipse? Before we get to this, did you really go to Oregon to watch the eclipse?
Well, we were at Mount Rainier, and we wanted to go. We love going to national parks, so we wanted to see some before Trump sells off the public lands to private owners. So we went to Mount Rainier. We went over to Columbia River Gorge. Then we drove down and saw the eclipse. It was pretty amazing, but it wasn't. I thought it was going to be darker.
Why do I picture you out in these goofy shorts with pasty white legs, you know, walking around, obviously a tourist who hasn't seen sunlight in the last 15 years, and walking around and everyone saying, look at that guy. He's a tourist. Those legs are translucent. And, you know, you're sitting there with your picnic basket like Yogi Bear, and you're watching the lunar eclipse. And I'm just thinking, and probably, you know, sipping on Boone's Farm strawberry hill. That's how I envision it.
Well, I had sunscreen, you know. So,
but I'm right about I'm right. Your legs have not seen. Your legs have not seen this.
There were a lot of people everywhere. I mean, it's like out in the boonies of Oregon, but there are huge traffic jams because there were 2 million people.
A lot of liberals like you wanted to see the eclipse also, so they went to Oregon. Of course, I'm sure everybody. I saw a lot of Make America Great bumper stickers. Did you?
One extra day to see it. It was pretty amazing. You should go see it next time.
I'm fascinated by it all. I mean, that's actually something that we can agree on. I would even think on a lot of the issues, I mean, I would even imagine that you believe that the rules of engagement that Obama put in place were so stringent that it literally tied the hands. Every military guy that I talked to between last night and today that I know, they're like, oh, thank God. If you don't send us to go fight a war and then put handcuffs on us like Obama did.
Well, you know, there are two sides to that.
Now, what's the side of the story?
It's true that they did have rules of engagement that were
onerous and ridiculous
in various ways. And the reason that the military had those rules of engagement.
No, they were Obama's.
Was killing civilians is so unpopular and such a productive.
Are you accusing our troops of killing civilians innocently?
They wanted to not accidentally kill kids, bomb weddings, stuff like that.
Are you suggesting our troops are baby killers?
No, that when you have bombings, and we had it with the drones too. It's not about being soldiers.
Sounds like it.
It's that if you don't have very stringent rules of engagement, the upside to that is you can act more freely. The downside is if somebody gives you bad intelligence, which does happen, you know, we're getting information from some shady characters over there, and sometimes they're passing on information, oh, you should bomb this spot because those are bad guys, and we bomb that spot, and then it turns out it was just that individual.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. You can't fire at somebody unless they would aim at you. Now, let me ask you, the converse argument to this is obvious. American troops are on the ground risking their lives, and they've got to make split-second decisions, and this is called war. And unfortunately, in war, it is one of it's the darker parts of the human experience. There are really evil people that exist in this world. The Taliban is really evil. Radical Islamists that strap bombs on their own kids, that's really evil. Those that oppress women and children and persecute gays and lesbians and kill them and persecute Christians and Jews. There's a lot of evil in this world right now. And so we're sending brave American young men and women to go fight. They're willing to fight, bleed, and die for their country. And then we're putting handcuffs on them, and they've got to make a split-second decision. And in the back of their mind, they're scared to death because, oh, am I going to go to jail if I make a mistake here? That's not fair to them. And if we're going to fight wars like that, then I don't think anybody should go fight a war because you can't win. And that's not winning to me.
Look, like I say, I see your point, and I am sympathetic to making the
job. You support the rules of engagement.
You just, I want you to acknowledge that there is a trade-off to be had here, which is,
should we err on the side of Americans or on the side of the
style? We're in the trenches, and you look and see the enemy, and they're telling them, no, you can't shoot at them. It's all about the gray area of how do you figure out if that's a combatant or not.
And how do you possibly, sitting in the comfort of Oregon looking at the eclipse, or Obama sitting in the comfort of the Oval Office, with all due respect, if we hire the right people, which we do, the best and the bravest that America has to offer, shouldn't it really be their decision, considering they're the ones that are going to live and die by that decision, not us?
Well, when you say should it be their decision,
that's right.
Say you're a pilot with a bomb, and you're flying in, and they're calling up to you, and they say, here's the coordinates to drop the bomb. The question is, at the military intelligence level, what is the degree of certainty?
I don't like,
you know, what the
collateral damage.
That's the rules of engagement are all about.
No, that's not the rules of engagement.
In the gray area.
No, I can give you an example of the Obama rules of engagement. The guy's name is Clint Lawrence. Look up the case. Clint Lawrence took over a platoon after a week or 2 weeks prior. Many in that platoon were killed by these guys on motorcycles with explosive devices. And then all of a sudden, he's got a split-second decision to make because there's his platoon that already lost some members, and a couple of motorcycles aren't listening to the roadblocks, and they're coming racing down right towards them. And he has to make a split-second decision. Are they bombers? Are they people that are here to kill us, or are they good people? And he had to make a split-second decision. He ended up ordering the troops to fire to protect them. Now, it turned out in the case that they didn't have bombs with them, but he made the decision, and he will own that the rest of his life. But then it later came out after his trial that the DNA of these two people were on improvised explosive devices that did kill Americans. He's got 20 years in. No, he's in jail right now,
like that,
Austin.
If the fact pattern's what you describe, I would be inclined that we relax some rules of engagement to allow that split-second type decision. But you can't get away from the fact that the reason you got to make a choice about how close to the border on the gray area situations do you want to get. And it is a helpful recruiting device for the evil guys that they can say, look, this was a couple who was driving and they weren't members of ISIS, and the military just shot them, or that the drones bombed a mosque and it wasn't a mosque where they were hiding weapons. And things like that are massive recruiting devices for terrorists, and that's why they put in those rules of engagement.
Can I just say, I am really stunned that you support this, and that you're going to say that somehow in the back of the troops' minds, the answer to that is that we hire the best and the bravest and the toughest. And that means the best generals. We get the best intelligence. Listen, nobody likes innocent people ever dying. I'm pro-life, Austin. I want to see everybody live a happy, prosperous life. I believe we're all children of God, and some go awry and some get indoctrinated into evil ideologies. But at the end of the day, sadly, when you have to battle evil and you have to stand up for liberty and fight for the lives of Americans, that also means when you're in wartime, it means that people are going to die. And yes, some innocent people, and it breaks everybody's heart when an innocent person dies. Let me give you two examples. Was it wrong for Truman to drop the... Hang on. Was it wrong for Truman to drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
I don't think so.
Innocent people died, Austin. A lot of innocent people died.
One controversy about that is, did Harry Truman get to make the decision, or did the military decide without consulting the president?
Okay, I didn't ask you that question. Wait, don't get in the weeds. Wait a minute. Don't get in the weeds here. Innocent people died. There was what we call, and it is a cold term, I don't even like it, collateral damage. Innocent children, innocent men and women that were not engaged in war with us died. But it ended the war, and it prevented future American deaths. Was that the right decision?
As I say, I think it was the right decision. There is a critical argument over, was that the decision for Harry Truman to make, or should that be allowed? Should nuclear weapon decisions, for example, be tasked down to lower level commanders than the commander in chief? That by your
but either
logic,
way, says, hey, listen, I'm not going to get in the weeds here with you.
The military are the best people, so they should just be able to decide.
So a decision that guaranteed the deaths of however many thousands of innocent people, including children, was the right decision. So how do you justify the rules of engagement after what you just said?
President of the United States made that decision. They did not allow lower-level troops to make the decision.
Well, then you can't send men and women into harm's
way. That's exactly the point.
You can't send men and women into harm's way and put handcuffs on them. You cannot do that. It's not fair to them if we're going to ask them to risk their lives for their country. It is listen, you know what? This is complicated, but at the end of the day, we can't send brave men and women to die and not give them the ability to defend themselves. And on occasion, they're going to be wrong. It's sad. I wish it never would happen. I wish evil didn't exist, but it does. And radical Islamists are evil, and they want to kill all of us. And as we continue with Austin Goolsbee is back with us. All right. So I just want to establish what we've been talking about here. So you think it was right what Harry Truman decided, the two bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I mean, by the way, it is a human tragedy. If the Japanese never bombed Pearl Harbor, my father spent 4 years in the Pacific. You hate that innocent men, women are killed and children are killed. But it also ended and stopped evil in that time. That was being perpetrated against this country, and we were innocent. And you look at that and you say, OK, that was the right decision. But then you want to put handcuffs on brave men and women on the ground in Afghanistan and other places that are battling evil in our time and say that if God forbid, they better make sure that gun is pointed at them and they better have evidence and they're going to prove their innocence and they're not assumed innocent. That's happened way too much to our brave men in uniform, Austin. And I don't understand your logic if you support. We know that thousands and thousands of innocent people died in Japan with those two bombs. We know it. But we also know it ended the war. And we also, and you say it was the right decision. And so do I. It's not an easy decision, but it's the right decision.
Analogous in the following way. One, that's after 4 years of long, hard war. My grandpa was in the Pacific War, and I think we had to drop the atomic bomb, and that was the advanced technology that we had at that moment. We had no way to find only those select few parts of the Japanese landscape or army or whatever. We had an atomic bomb or nothing. But we have established that the decisions about super important things are to be determined by commander in chief and above.
You're going off on an entirely different argument here. And I'm saying if it was the right decision, then we've got to make sure that the people we hire for our military are capable of making the right decisions under the most difficult circumstances. And we've got to trust them. And frankly, if we're asking them to fight, bleed and die, and they don't get the greatest benefits in that job, if we're asking them to do that, I don't think we have the right to come in and second guess them.
And so if we take in Afghanistan, the critical rules of engagement, as I understand it, are about the use of drones and the targeting of
individuals.
No, but
it's also troops on the ground.
They're not the cases where a guy's in the trenches and they come running right at him. Those are rare cases. The rules of engagement are things like, should we bomb a group of targets which are associated with, in some way, the Taliban, or should we get further information to figure out whether they're actually members of the Taliban or not?
That's totally
different than the atomic bomb.
I gave you specific examples. Clint Lawrence's but one. And we've had eight times the number of soldiers, according to one article that I read. I can't cite it now, but it was very high. A dramatic increase in bringing these soldiers to trial, second-guessing them, and many end up spending time in jail. And to me, it is just, you can't fight a war. If you're going to fight a war like that, then get out. Don't even bother. You're wasting everybody's time, and it's not fair. We're putting handcuffs on people. But, Austin, I got to roll. I'm glad you enjoyed the lunar eclipse, and we will continue this discussion. It's great not to talk about Obama's horrible economic policies for once. I did bring that up quite a bit with you, but thank you for being with us. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Toll-free telephone number is 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. All right, so remember this woman, the state senator from the great state of Missouri, and her name is Maria Chappelle Nadal. And she puts this Facebook post up and she hopes Trump gets assassinated and she takes it down. But she says, I'm not going to apologize. I'm never going to apologize. Now, listen.
It was inappropriate. I've said that three times now.
And are you apologizing for it?
No. When the president apologizes for what he says, I'll apologize.
So
but
you,
the,
my as far to say your statement was inappropriate.
Yes.
You're not apologizing.
It was inappropriate. It was wrong. I put it on, posted it to my personal Facebook page and I deleted it.
But you're not apologizing.
No.
All right, I'm not apologizing. No. Really? Well, I hope, by the way, at some point the Secret Service visits her if they haven't already. Now let's go on to what is can only be described as a bizarre apology after she swore she'd never apologize. Listen.
President Trump, I apologize to you and your family. I made a mistake. And you know what I'm reminded of is that we are all human. And I'm also a child of God. I made a mistake, and I'm owning up to it. And I am not ever going to make a mistake like that again. And I have learned my lesson. My judge and my jury is my Lord Jesus Christ.
Okay, that's fine, but she should still be removed. She was defiant, and it sounds like now that the momentum has built to the point where she's going to lose her job. I suspect that's where the apology came from. Now, that's just me. What do I know? How do I read somebody's heart? Hard to tell, but I kind of know politicians well. And when push comes to shove and it's their jobs on the line, well, maybe we'll rethink that just for a second. All right, let's get to our busy telephones. Many of you have been extremely patient. We're going to go to Phoenix, Arizona. The president, of course, in Arizona, got a big, big town hall tonight. Scheduled to begin as Hannity begins, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We'll cover that rally and commentary afterwards. Let's go to Linda. Linda, hi. You're on 550 KFYI and the Sean Hannity Show.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for speaking with me today. I'm looking forward to President Trump coming to the Valley. It's very exciting to have our president attend and come and visit us. But and I really wanted to go to the rally. I just don't have any bodyguards to protect me from the Soros-funded professional anti-Trump protesters.
Well, from what I understand, look, I think we learned a lot in Boston this weekend, and that is when police and the local mayor and the local governor and the state governor and law enforcement are given the opportunity to do their job. I mean, you had all these peaceful protesters in Boston. They did a great job. And the few people that were there that wanted to cause trouble, the police did their job and they were able to do it, thank God, without incident. There's going to be people tonight, I guarantee you, that want to disrupt, cause trouble. Probably the few will get into whatever the arena is and they're going to try and cause trouble. And, you know, I just believe that with all the warning that is out there, that there's going to be enough in terms of law enforcement to get the job done. That's what I believe.
I agree with you. And he's coming to the convention center. And I mean, we have a great police force here. It's just a matter of, you know, our own Senator McCain and Jeff Flake. I mean, they just badmouth the president and his agenda. And I get a little more than mildly nauseous because I feel they do not represent me or my president. And they're not on the same side, but their own. And I also feel they're a Democratic wing of the Republican Party. So when they attack President Trump, I feel like they're attacking me.
Listen, there has been, and I understand that. I understand there are some people now frustrated, and they just, I'm not at that place where others are, and I'll tell you why. The attacks this president has lived under for the entire time of his presidency, and even in the lead up to the election, but more specifically after he won and shocked the world, and nobody saw it coming. We saw it coming. I saw it coming. You saw it coming. But not everybody saw this coming. And when it happened, they could not believe they lost. And they have been trying their level best ever since to try and undo a duly elected president. And they were trying their level best to hurt the president. And they're trying their best to get him out of office. It's funny, you know, with the latest from Charlottesville on, we haven't heard a whole lot about Russia, 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 Russia. And it's all about the deep state wanting to leak on this president. It's all about unmasking that never should have taken place, surveillance that never should have taken place, leaks, intelligence leaks that never should have taken place. It's about a Democratic Party that has no vision at all, no identity at all. And the only thing they think they can run on is a bumper sticker, a better way. That's not an agenda that's going to inspire anybody. Weak Republicans that have up till now not gotten their job done. They better get their act together because the next 3.5 months will define their opportunity to keep the House and Senate and gain seats in the Senate or not. And then you got never Trumpers. They want to run with the narrative. And there's been a very false narrative from the beginning. Those are five extraordinarily powerful forces that have been against the president. And people just wish we'd have a few weeks of governing and a few weeks of getting things done and a few weeks focused on the American people and the forgotten men and women. A lot of people want that. And unfortunately, the president, you know, 80% of the time, and people look at the turnover, and it's if you're spending 80% of your time dealing with crap that nobody should have to deal with, then this sadly is the net outcome of this. The media just wants to take him down, and it's not going to stop for the next 4 years. And Republicans better understand that if they don't get their job done and serve people, we're going to be in trouble. Let's go to Kate is in Houston, Texas. KTRH. Kate, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hey, Sean, my buddy, my pal. How you doing?
What's going on, Kate? My buddy, my pal, my BFF. What's happening?
That's right. Well, I've got a couple of things I want to razz you on. But what I really want to say first is that I'm just so pleased. I thought Trump's speech last night was fantastical. He had such a great tone and tenor, and yet he was humble. He explained his process, which I really think for people like me who are constant Trumpers, I was a Trumper before he walked, you know, came down that escalator, that when you allow people to come in on that decision-making process, it really shows your leadership. I mean, I know as a leader that when I tell people that we are changing the direction versus just, you know, telling them, but I explained the process of how I came to that conclusion, that it really just makes a huge difference. And I really love that he, in the very beginning of that speech, he declared once a freaking again, sorry about that, that we are all Americans.
By the way, freaking is not on the PC ban list yet, but just stay tuned a couple of more years and I'm sure that's going to be added to the list of things we can't say. Yeah.
With my kids, if I say freaking, they freak out. So anyway, so once a freaking again, I'll say that nice and clearly.
Every time I say any curse word, even if I say, let's just say the vernacular for one's rear end, my daughter hits me. I have a lot of black and blues for my daughter.
Well, my kids are right behind that because they sit there and say, oh, Sean said that word.
Oh,
and I'm like, no, it's not a bad word. It's just the word that
I know.
You know is a donkey.
I got
anyway,
it. So, yeah, exactly. It's a donkey.
Yeah, it's a donkey. So anyway, I just want to say, though, I really loved that he said that because, you know, I stood behind him from the very beginning and never, ever would have ever called him a racist or a sympathizer. He has a daughter who is Jewish. She converted to Judaism. He is not a white supremacist. He does not have racism in his heart. I've never, ever believed in that. And it's really bothered me when people have come out with that continual narrative. You know, those are high-level, deep-digging, scar-making insults to throw at anyone, especially when there's no evidence of that in a person's life.
But there's no bounds to the hatred of those on the left today. I mean, you know, when you really think about it, you know, there's certain blame that goes to the Republican Party because they have not forcefully fought back every 2 and 4 years. And I have spent all of this time pointing out every election season that the race card is going to be played. Then every 2 years, I run the history of the Democrats playing the race card. And
right. We've
got the evidence and proof. And Republicans are just like, OK, as long as it's not about me, I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to get in trouble. And I'm like, it's emboldened the left to keep doing this. And it's got to stop.
Want him to be able to do the job that you constantly are telling us that he is doing. His accomplishments are numerable, but we don't get to hear about that because we have this Democratic playbook that is not new, like you're saying. Okay, so I want to razz you a little bit. Can I razz you?
Everybody razzes me. It's like it says on my back, hit me. Go ahead.
All right. So my kids run around. My five-year-old runs around because of my dear friend Linda, my best buddy.
Oh, my. You know, wait. Says, slow down. Linda has another first of all best buddy. I'm shocked. Go ahead.
So my five-year-old is running around my house in Houston, Texas, saying, first of all, blah, blah, blah. And then she gets all the way to fifth of all. So we love that. Second thing I want to razz you about is, you know, we know you're from New York. We know you live in the New York area. I'm not going to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But we know you live in that area. And you always say, not going to happen. Like, happen. Like,
not going to happen.
What the heck is that?
I'll just say it's not going to happen again. How's that?
Okay. Okay, last
thing. You know, the funny thing is all the year, I love accents. I mean, I could talk to Katie Hopkins, the gobby one, all day just because I want to hear her accent, or Stuart Varney because I want to hear his accent. I love Southern accents. I love New York, New Jersey, Long Island accents. I'm fascinated by it all. And it's funny, all these years in radio, I usually with pinpoint accuracy can pick up where people are from. And the people that have really no accent at all are people from the Midwest. And so it's I'm not even really paying attention right now, but you don't really have that strong an accent.
No, I don't. I was raised in Jersey. But
yeah, I can hear a little Jersey girl twinge in there. Jersey Shore.
Okay, last thing, and this is super important.
Yeah.
On your website, you have your podcast, and your little, you know, your header up there is kind of in this red tinge. And our kids all think that you look like a vampire whenever I go in to look at the podcast. They're like, he's a vampire. And I'm like, well, it's
hey, Linda, you got to talk to
Blair. Oh, my God. We're all dying laughing in here,
I
Kate.
I look like a vampire. What did you do to me on
first
the
of all, I, that's going to be another project for me. So you can tell your five-year-old, thank you very much. By the way,
I got to tell Kate a story. So because Linda and I razz each other, to use your term, on the air a lot. So I wrote Linda's mother recently. And Linda's mother apologized for Linda's behavior to me. How cool is that?
There's a lot of apologies going around these days for me. I don't know how I feel about that.
It was so good. And I'm like, will you tell her that I'm your new favorite and it's not her?
And now, she did. And that's the depressing part.
And Linda, you got to understand something about Linda and a mother. She tells her mother everything. I've never met a woman.
I think the more important fact that we need to highlight right now is the fact that when you say my name, it comes out as Linda because you're from Long Island.
Linda.
And that should be the funniest part. No, you didn't. I got the tape, my friend.
Linda.
That's right.
Kate's on my side, so you lose.
I'll tell you when my accent comes out more is when I'm tired, and I'm a little tired today. I won't lie.
Yeah, earlier you said afterwards.
But I'm telling you, it comes out because I get lazy in my speech and because I consciously work towards lessening the accent that I know that I have. And it's funny because I spent 5 years in Rhode Island, 5 in California, 2 in Alabama, 4 in Georgia. And over the years, I first realized I have tapes of me in Alabama on the air. And I'm Sean, New York Talk Radio Coffee. That's me. And when I actually began to hear myself, I was like, oh, man, no wonder everybody calls this program and says I talk funny, because to them I talk funny. And to me, they talk funny.
Listen, get your accent back and you two can have a 5-year-old run around and make fun of you. It's what everyone wants.
Hey, listen, my daughter is going to be 16 at the end of next week. So I'm way beyond the 5-year-olds running around.
You have someone else to make fun of you now. 16-year-old, even better.
No. So my daughter has her friends over the house last night. As long as we're all chatting here, right, Katie? You don't have anything to do. So my daughter has her friends over the house yesterday. And I'm like, girls, are you like my daughter? She, like, when you're here, doesn't really know me anymore. And are you going through the same stage where you roll your eyes at your dad and dad's not cool anymore and giving dad a hug? And
I hope you know that as you said that they were rolling their eyes at you.
I don't care.
You know that, right?
And the girls all started laughing because they all do the same thing. I told my daughter at 12 that she's going to go through this stage. And she didn't believe me. We were in the car the other day. And I said, see, you're in the stage. I told you you were going to get there. And then I said, here's the good news. And she goes, what, Daddy? And I go, you're going to get out of this stage and like me again. And I said, it'll happen. And she said, you know what I got? I got an eye roll. All right, Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Now, as we come on the air tonight, the president will be beginning his rally in Phoenix. We have reports that numerous protesters, including disruptive organizations, resistance organizations, are all going to be there. And I'm sure that will be part of our coverage. It's all happening 10 Eastern tonight on the Fox News Channel. Hannity, we hope you'll set your DVR. We'll have the latest fallout tomorrow on this program. Thanks for being with us. See you tonight, live at 10, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.